Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Joan of Arc is the rare historical figure who seems to have transcended into the realm of mythology, even though she really did exist. Joan is widely considered to be a key reason the French emerged victorious in the Hundred Years' War. She died in 1431 after being declared a heretic and was burned at the stake by the English and their allies in Burgundy. In 1920, she was canonized in the Catholic Church. Countless books, movies, and paintings have been made about her life and role on the battlefield. And now author Catherine J. Chen adds her contribution, a fresh new look at Joan of Arc, in her new novel, Joan. In Chen's telling, Joan of Arc is not a pious French peasant who is drawn to help the French prince after receiving visions from angels, as the story usually is told. Instead, she is an uncommonly strong girl with a good military mind who leaves home after the devastating loss of her sister and to escape her abusive father. Sure, there's something else out there for her. Joan takes her talents to the city, where her size, strength, and skill with weapons quickly becomes the talk of the town and catches the eye of royal military commanders, who start to wonder if Joan might be able to help them win the war against the English. Kirkus calls the novel, quote, a very human portrait of Joan of Arc and an elegant and engaging work of historical fiction. Joan is out now, and Catherine J. Chen joins me to discuss. Catherine, welcome to All of It.
Oh, hi, Allison. Thank you for having me on the show.
When's the first time you heard of Joan of Arc?
Oh, when I was much younger. As a child, I think everyone gets some basic history lesson of Joan of Arc, but the lesson was probably very rudimentary. And it was just that I knew that she was a military leader, that she was canonized, and that she died the most horrific of deaths by being burned at the stake.
In your research process, what is the most commonly held myth about Joan of Arc that you discovered was a myth, not true?
That is a really good question. I think there is still some contention around the role of the voices in her history. In the trial, she talks extensively about the voices. She was interrogated endlessly about them, what they look like, could she feel them, how they appeared. And yet, on May 30th, which was the day of her death, she seemed to relate that the voices had failed her because she wasn't rescued or she wasn't ransomed. And I think that is, that I don't want to say that throws the voices into question. I wouldn't go that far, but I do believe that she said that there was a particular vision that she related about how an angel had brought her king, that would be Charles VII of Dauphin, a crown. And then she, on that day, apparently she admitted that there was no angel, it was herself who was meant to bring him the crown. And it seemed to be more of a figurative vision than anything. So I would say that that is just a very interesting historical anecdote that I came across. But also one has to keep in mind that the session on May 30th was not an actual trial session. I believe the interrogation, the conversation took place in her prison cell. And so there were not the normal number of witnesses present. It was related on paper by, it should be kept in mind, a hostile enemy. And so whether that account is true and what actually happened in the cell is still, you know, up for debate.
Now, Catherine, the fact that you know the date and that it took place in a cell leads me to believe that you have read a lot and absorbed a lot. What kind of records and historical documents about Joan still exist? What were you able to access?
Oh, I read this very fine work called The Trial of Joan of Arc by Daniel Hobbins. And that book includes a very wonderful introduction. I think it's published by Harvard University Press. There is also the retrial of Joan of Arc. It's called The Evidence for Her Vindication by the well-known historian Regine Pernoud. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. And there are just countless, you know, as you can imagine, biographies of her, Mary Gordon, who's I think better known as a fiction author, wrote a biography, and the well-respected historian Helen Castor also wrote a biography of Joan of Arc that I thought was quite wonderful. And so there's no, in my case, I was very lucky because there's no end of resources to look into her life and to sort of pick and choose what you want to write about.
Was there any detail you came across that really helped you create your Joan, or was a catalyst for your version of Joan? We'll talk a little bit about how what your Joan is like as opposed to the way people have thought about her traditionally.
Yeah, I think so. When I was reading the retrial accounts that redeemed her name, there was a knight that described her as being extraordinary experienced. You know, he said that, you know, she was simple and innocent, I believe were his words, and all other things except in matters of war. And she would fully immerse herself in strategy and in battle plans. And she seemed to come across to him as a fully experienced captain of war, despite her obvious youth and lack of experience. And I found that quite extraordinary that, you know, someone who was immersed in this world would praise her, would comment on her persona like that. And, you know, that is echoed too by another woman who witnessed Joan riding a horse, and I believe it was wielding a lance. And she commented that Joan could ride the horse and wield the lance as well as any of the finest soldiers that she had seen. And that also took me aback.
My guest is Catherine J. Chen. The name of her novel is Joan. We're going to ask you to think about a section of the book that you would like to read. You've picked something from chapter one. Would you set this up for us and then read a bit?
Oh, yeah, sure. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to read. It's so this is at the end of chapter one, where a rock battle between the boys of Domremy and the boys of Maxi has just taken place. And unfortunately, there's been, at best, one could describe it as a tragic accident where a boy has died. And so this is actually the very end of the first chapter. It begins, "The Dauphin is still alive, but in this place, a boy has died." This, her uncle Durand has told her, finishing another of his battle stories, is the way of war. One day, all is well with the world. The affairs of kings are solely the problem of some ancient and royal bloodline that has nothing to do with the poor cottager who eats cabbage for every meal. The princes are feuding, but the earth is being tilled, the grass is being cut, the sheaves are being tied, until one day the yawning guard climbs the stairs to the battlements and, peeping over the crenellated edge, sees an army 10,000 strong waiting for his surrender. One day the cottager wakes in the dead of night with the tip of a sword pressed against his ribs. It is not always parents and grandparents who die first. A father, sweating over his work, hears a shout to come and come quickly, and running he steps as through a nightmare into a clearing to see a face familiar to him from its birth. The face will never wake again. It is cold to his touch.
That's Catherine Chen reading from Joan. How does this moment shape Joan throughout the rest of her life?
Oh, I think it shapes her a great deal. I mean, from a craft point of view, I wanted it to serve as a kind of through line, as a common thread that runs throughout the book. And she thinks of this moment when she goes into battle. And I think there's a precise moment when she realizes that what she witnessed as a child was just a battle in miniature. And now it's these older boys, if you will, who are actually, you know, killing each other. And, you know, there's also, I wanted to instill the sense that the war doesn't just touch soldiers in the arena of the battlefield. It extends into innocent lives as well. And in the case of this particular young boy, he's dragged into it. He doesn't actually want to fight. And furthermore, there's an echo of, you know, this boy is, you know, loyal to the French. But later there is an English soldier named William who dies, and Joan witnesses him dying. And I wanted to create a parallel between the French Guillaume and the English William, and echo that memory for Joan as well.
The Joan in your book is remarkably strong and tall for a woman at that time and able to break a man's bones with her bare hands. Are these physical attributes drawn from any historical records or purely Catherine Chen's version of Joan?
I would have to say that that is probably purely my my version of Joan. And I have to say that I feel comfortable taking such liberties because in truth, I believe she is already such an elusive figure. She's been appropriated by a number of movements and institutions already, such as and not limited to the Catholic Church, the suffrage movement. She's a feminist icon. And to be truthful, whether historically she could be considered a feminist, I would say is rather, questionable, given what I've read about her. And she's inspired fashion and, even the bob haircut of the early 1900s was inspired by her. So she's already been used by so many things like extreme right-wing groups in native France as well. And so I felt comfortable taking this already larger than life figure and expanding on her a lot. And I feel too that just, her name, just speaking it turns on some kind of light bulb within us. It's as if the mere utterance of her name could awaken a dormant spirit inside of us. And not to, turn the conversation too personal, but I think I've since realized, especially for some reason after the publication of this book, that I use historical fiction to write about what is deeply personal to me. Mm. And so, I remember specifically from my childhood, a moment of domestic violence and my mother, an individual was in short pulling out her hair, and her hair came out in clumps later, and she was beaten. And I witnessed this, and I remember actually falling to my knees and begging the individual to stop hitting my mother and pulling her hair. And I believe now that there is a direct connection between what I experienced and witnessed both as a youth and the Joan that I've created, who is this, as you've said, remarkably strong and capable woman. I wanted her to be a manifestation of strength and of standing up for yourself and of doing what is right and, pursuing what one believes is correct and fulfilling one's destiny. And I think it is a manifestation of the weakness that I felt as a youth growing up in that kind of household.
Has writing fiction been a salve for you in terms of issues that you've had in the past? That's such an extraordinary story you just told us.
Yes, I believe it has. And, this is quite extraordinary. I didn't realize the number of parallels that came up between the book and what I experienced in my own life. For instance, the fact that Joan's dog dies. Well, I mean, that's obviously made up. But, my dog died in a horrific manner. And I remember spending, I would say, like 8 or 12 hours with my dog the day before he died. And then, all was well. I was playing with him in the backyard for hours and hours. And then, I fell asleep. And the next morning he was gone. And I was told that he was dead. And obviously the manner in which he died was very different than the way Joan's dog dies, but it was equally traumatizing. And I didn't realize that parallel until after I long finished the book.
It's amazing what our subconscious will do when we're not paying attention.
Yeah, absolutely.
It will just have its way with us, especially if you're in a creative pursuit. Thank you so much for sharing that part of your life with us. I really do appreciate it. My guest is Catherine Chen. The name of the book is Joan. Just a couple craft questions. You decide to end the novel before Joan is put on trial by the English.
Yes.
Why did you decide make that choice?
Oh, I think it would have been extremely difficult for me to write her actual death. And as soon as the trial begins, she enters completely into the sphere of what I like to call the world of small men and small minds. If anyone is ever interested in reading a trial transcript, it's readily available, as I've said. But, she's literally hounded with questions and repeated questions. And from a craft point of view, that would have been very, very difficult to transfer into a novel, I think, and make it a compelling read without it also being very repetitive as court cases often are. And second, I just think it would have been very difficult for both myself and the reader to witness Joan's death, especially there was one detail that I read, that when she was being walked to the pyre, she began to weep. And I have to say that at that moment, I completely lost my sympathy for, you know, the church as an institution and for the people who had condemned her, because I wanted to focus on the fact that this was very much a young woman who wanted to live. And she did not think about, I think, being canonized, because after all, she was canonized and made a saint 489 years, nearly 500 years after her death. It wasn't a case of canonization in the case of, you know, Louis the Ninth, where he was made into a saint three decades after his death. And so I wanted to avoid that pain, I think, for both myself and the reader, in short.
The name of the novel is Joan. It is about Joan of Arc. I've been speaking with its author, Catherine Chen. Catherine, thank you so much for being with us. We really appreciate your time today, and congratulations on the book. And I'm glad you got a chance to read it, a little bit of it, and also for sharing some of your personal story.
Oh, thank you so much, Allison. It was great being on the show.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.